Did it ever occur to you that someone could have cut it without actually being in the room, using a high-powered laser through the glass in the ceiling?
You are kidding me.
Of course I am. The idea is ridiculous.
Welcome to One Foot in the Creek, the sequel to our pilot episode where we rambled about Jonathan Creek. By we, I'm joined by old pal Si Marsh. Hello. Si.
Hiya.
We are reviewing your favourite episode, aren't we, of Jonathan Creek?
Well, it's not my favourite, but...
This is your go-to episode.
It's probably the
it?
One I've watched the most, I reckon.
This is the initiation episode. If you've met someone new or any of our old mates, you say you have to watch this particular episode. This is the ones. This is the centered room, isn't it, from series two?
Yeah, I didn't really explain it very well, I don't think, in the last pod. The reason I kind of like to show people this one is because it's quite formulaic in the sense of, like, starts off with the mystery at the start.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I don't know, it's just really well paced, I think. And the music. You got me to watch it last night.
You have to do some homework. We weren't prepared last time. This time you've got the Creek book, annual for now.
But yeah, like even like the music is like, I don't know, it's like classic Creek nostalgia in that episode. This is really good. It's probably like the best music throughout, I would say. What was the question?
No idea. But we just thought we mucked about with the pilot episode just for fun. But you had a desire to sort of maybe talk about an episode in that. And so have I, actually. You know, we're not an out-and-out Creek pod, but this is just a Renwick production. And yeah, it's good. It's good. It's quite... I haven't reviewed an episode of anything for months now. So back to my roots with the pod. Bullet point in every single...
Well, I'm not very good at stuff like this, because I don't really know what I'm looking for. I just end up watching the program and I'm like, and then just take it for what it is.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that's what I used to be like, but I think doing a podcast, if you're reviewing stuff, you tend to feel the need to bullet point just like everything you see, just in case it's interesting.
Yeah. It's great. But I do have the book in front of me this time. I managed to...
The World of Jonathan Creek by Steve Clark, who's...
not the guy that you were going on about last time.
That's got to be Steve Clark, who's done some Fools and Horses books.
Oh, I don't know, but you were going about the one about the...
Shit, hang on. I'm going to have to Google this.
What, you forgot his name?
Yeah, have I forgotten it?
You've gone about him the whole time last time as well.
Richard Webber.
Yeah.
No, I thought it might have been a Richard Webber book, but that's Steve Clark, because he's written...
Forwarded by Bob Monkhouse.
Oh, that's interesting, because Bob's
or
in
forward
this...
by Bob Monkhouse.
Yeah, so Bob Monkhouse is in this episode, isn't he?
Yeah.
And quite unrecognisable, even with a mere moustache.
Yeah, he is quite, actually.
He's not,
is
like,
it,
obviously...
What is it? Is it because of his hair? Because does he never have it slicked back?
Probably. Like, Bob is a legendary comedian, isn't he? He died like 20-odd years ago.
Yeah.
But with that moustache and his slightly different haircut, it's for years I didn't really clock on it was him.
Did you not? His persona in the program as well is quite was completely different to his actual character, isn't it, normally?
Yeah, he's a total arsehole in this episode. He plays it well, doesn't he?
Yeah, yeah. And I'm looking at through the book. It's got the rate. This is such a good book. It's got the ratings of each show.
25 years ago, this one was out.
Yeah, it was. Look at this. We're well prepared this time. It was first transmitted on the 7th of February, 1998.
Oh, I made that note as well.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, I'll piss
How many me. Ratings has it got, though?
Didn't get that.
How
long's the episode?
10.49 million.
This is the era of It's 98, so it's mostly five channels. People have got Sky, but it's not that common, is it? Sky and cable.
Yeah, but looking at like the first two series, because it hasn't, it covers like series three, but it must have been just coming out because it's got first transmitted for autumn to set spring for series three. So this series three mustn't have been out at the point.
This episode aired 7th of February 98.
Yep, that's right. Yeah,
I was going to say the episode I had downloaded was 50 minutes. Well, IMDb says 50 minutes.
Wait, what do you mean downloaded?
Well, legally. I have got the box set.
I was going to say, you got the box
My set. Version was 48 minutes, 57 seconds.
Right.
IMDb has it down as 50 minutes. So I wonder what cut I've missed. It's over a minute.
And it might... iTunes
has it down as 44 minutes.
You might... Oh... iTunes.
So I just wonder if
that's weird.
There's
iTunes probably cut it, but then the one you've got might the speed of it might be different. Because I remember when we tried to watch a Home Alone film once. I had it on DVD, and you were watching on Disney, and it kept going out of sync. So one of them was quicker than the other.
Yes, yeah, so it's not necessarily a cut as such.
No, it might just be the way it's yeah.
Yeah, but iTunes are. Really good with Fools and Horses. Anyway, having longer unedited episodes, easy for me to say.
Who?
iTunes.
Oh, iTunes.
You wouldn't think so, but there's also when Creek was aired in different countries. I'm sure there's something where they had to accommodate adverts and they had to cut certain things just to make it long enough for their programming.
Yeah.
That's a bit rubbish, isn't it? I imagine that would be infuriating.
I did catch like a few episodes on UK TV, a streaming service. It was awful because it cut all the swearing, but in a really bad way. It literally cut the scenes of them swearing, and it was terrible.
What are your first thoughts of the Scented Room then?
My first thoughts.
I've got some like my first initials
even.
Yeah, like what's
when I first watched it.
Well, I thought it was interesting that we had a locked room mystery, but with no sort of dead body involvement. It's a locked room without a dead body.
I guess it's more of a disappearing
illusion
trick, really, isn't it? I guess. Yeah, I guess that's the other part that's quite good about showing somebody this one because it's quite quick. It's like within the first 10 minutes, you've seen the. Well, not even probably the first 10 minutes, you've seen the trick. And it's like, oh, that's kind of got you grabbed. And it's like, how did that kind of happen?
For One Foot in the Grave fans, Peter Copley stars in this as Eric. He was in this first series.
What was he in?
One Foot in the Grave.
Oh, right.
Yeah, there's obviously a few crossovers.
Which episode? Okay, who did he play in it?
He played Mrs. Mulavera's slightly senile father.
So clearly this was after that, because that would have been years ago, right?
Oh, this is 1990 we're talking, first series. Oh,
okay.
Hey, I'm not going to get his name. I mean, his character, his episode.
What's his name? Peter Copley.
Peter Copley.
Yeah, that's right. He's even got the ruddy masseuse actress in this book. Well, I didn't even say a word.
Oh, Eternal Quadrangle. The Eternal Quadrangle, he's...
Well, I don't know which one that is anyway. No, yeah.
Series 1 episode cross... references for series one for anything I struggle with, even Fools and Horses. Like, anyway, yeah. So he's sort of subtly funny, isn't he? We'll come to his bit.
Yeah, I don't think he's meant to be.
He's not meant to be funny, but I find his acting funny in this. That little lad bought the little boy. Obviously, people listening who are Jonathan Creek fans, so making subtle references, you probably know, but the little chap Benjamin, he hasn't appeared in anything before or after this.
Oh, hasn't he?
No.
Sam Bradley, apparently his name is. Where did you look him up, did you?
Well, yeah, IMDb.
Oh, right.
I suppose one to talk about nearer the time, but like the chances of the schoolgirls who are involved, the schoolgirl involved with this
trick. You're going to say this.
Yeah, probably should leave that to a bit later, but there's obviously schoolgirls involved with this, you know, mystery.
Oh, you can say one of them.
One of them, I always say this, don't I? When we've watched it, I always thought the actress Cara Twinton,
who
played Dawn. It's not her, is it? But I swear it's...
No, it must be.
Well, she'd be the same age, because I looked at her age.
Exactly the same.
She'd have been about, in 98, she'd have been about 12, 13.
Nah, it's got to be her, surely.
Well, it's not in the credits. She's not in her... You look at her profile, she's not got Jonathan Creek listed. Cara Toynton.
You might want to... No, that's got to be her, because she looks so much like her.
Yeah, let's just...
Has she got, like, Twitter or something that you can ask her?
Actually, I'll just double check whilst I'm on the pod. I might have overlooked this.
I'd put my money, like maybe like a quid, on that being her.
She's in a football factory. This, you could put a pound on this here.
Yeah, put a quid on it.
I haven't agreed to this bet. Well, okay, so her first, according to IMDb, 2001, it teaches the comedy, which...
Yeah. She might not have been officially, like, credited it right or something. I don't know.
All bets are off then, are they? That?
Well, I'm just saying, it probably might be her, but she might not be, like, officially credited.
No. Should we start from the beginning, then, of this Scented Room?
Okay.
Series 2, Episode 3.
So they pull up to the house. Are we doing that?
Yeah.
Oh, shit, really?
Well, let me just... We're scene by scene, so I'll just say... The first scene, just describe what we're seeing. So
we're seeing the van come up to the house, right?
And it's a large stately home, isn't it?
Yeah. Do we know where that stately home is?
No, where is it?
I don't know, that's what I'm asking.
Is all the internal shots filmed there, or was it?
Where did I find this from? I think I told you when I found out, and I don't know where I found it out to, but the hallway, gallery kind of to the painting is a set, maybe. I mean, that might be something to ask Mr. Renwick, but I swear I read that or heard that it's a set to the actual painting room, the hallway to the painting. Everything else is inside.
By the way, Mr. Renwick's agreed to come on the pod to talk about Creek, so that'd be good.
This is in here, but I'm not really sure. I've just got the book out, so I haven't really I haven't studied it or looked at it for a good 10 years.
So what we can see is a minibus full of schoolgirls arrive as we see a saddened boy in his room looking on. It's got toys and games. This will be a bit of a running theme. Seems a bit fed up, in a bit of a solemn mood. And this bus full of schoolgirls arrive on some sort of field trip. And we're met with Martha, who we wholeheartedly agree is basically... another version of Marjorie Dawes from Little Britain.
Eric!
No disrespect to that actress, but she looks and dresses exactly like Marjorie Dawes. Who,
Fighters. Is that the one, yeah?
Fat Fighters, yeah. She spots Benjamin, the little boy, asks how he is, and this Martha, she's given a tour of the house, isn't she? Proclaims the house to be over 400 years old.
Oh, blimey, you've written all that down. Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, I start going hard on
Jesus.
This, mate.
Right, okay.
And is the residence of Lady Teresa and her family.
Mm-hmm.
The sort of the head of the house, if you like, is a famous theatre critic, Sunday Telegraph columnist. Sylvester Laflay, played by, we'll come to learn, Bob Monkhouse.
Yep.
And yeah, I think I love how she thinks the schoolgirls have any idea of what she's really talking on about, because they're kind of just
during the tour.
They're sort of like looking on in amazement at the house, but. I never paid attention to the finer details on field trips when I was that age.
Such a weird field trip, though, isn't it? Just to view a painting.
Well, yeah, but it's all engineered, isn't it?
Well, I know. Really, I realise that, but then they don't feel like. Then it's a bit
well, it isn't a field trip to see that painting. It's just let's go to a stately home and get a bit of culture.
Yeah,
down your neck. Anyway, so outside. Yeah, So outside the house is the large back lawn. Yep. Sylvester Laflay himself having a bit of a rub down, isn't he?
Massage, yeah.
Is he dictating into a recorder or something about a review?
He's reviewing a show he probably had seen because he's a film theatre critic, isn't he, or something?
Yeah, he's been overly harsh by the sounds of it. I wonder if this review is what's going through Renwick's mind about sitcoms at the time, because... A lot of his Renwick's energies, I think, are put into the writing. So he's thinking, "Oh, there's some crap out at the minute. I'm gonna."
Yeah, I was looking on like when I was.
I don't think Renwick would ever be overly harsh in a personal way, but maybe he can convey his message through.
Yeah, because I was reading this book, and there's a little clip here regarding One Foot in the Grave and David Renwick, and he's got Victor's personality isn't mine. Though we do share our basic cynicisms about life. Yeah. So I don't know if he puts like a lot of what he kind of feels into his writing.
I think it's universally agreed by fans that he probably does, but we can never be sure. I'm sure he'll put us straight on that when he comes on the pod.
Yeah, something to certainly ask, potentially, yeah.
Laflay's wife's looking on, doing a bit of gardening, and whilst Laflay's has back thighs are being groped right up to his arse cheeks.
How old is Bob Monkhouse in this, would you say?
60s.
And how I always thought she looked in her like
30s.
Late 30s.
She probably is mid to late 30s, yeah. Okay. Yeah, she's a jealous wifey. Looks like she's hatching a plan from afar. She's probably fed up with his his ways. We'll come to see his
They both seem pretty toxic, like
they're pretty miserable together, aren't they? It's just money that's gluing them together.
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely combination of jealousy and feeling slightly inferior of his manner, I'd say. Mr. Big Balls, a successful career guy.
Yeah.
Being waiting hand on foot. Well, I don't know what she does. She's just lady of the house, I suppose.
Oh, Klaus says she's
Not Klaus, Martha. Martha say?
No. Later on in the episode,
oh, yes, that's right.
In the restaurant, it's just one of those things where it's just like it goes through one ear and out the other.
He's saying you're gonna tell them what's happened because she's
blocking, like
she's like within government, isn't she, or something?
Yeah, or the council. I can't remember now, but she's blocking like their trip.
That's
in the park.
Yeah. We'll get to it. Yeah. So I was completely wrong. Yeah. So this wife is she's Lady Teresa Cutler.
Yeah,
mate, and she's hatching a plan to childish revenge. She's making the most rank sandwich ever.
It's rye bread.
It's horrible. Yeah, it's the bread. I think the bread would taste worse than the stingernail she puts in, right?
Oh, by the way,
bit of pepper.
I think Alex thought we had Renwick on today, and he asked me what was put in the sandwich. I was like, it's obviously stingernails. I don't even need to ask him that.
Alex just got a mention on the last episode, and I'm sure he'll join us for the Renwick special. He's part of a trio of us three who enjoy a Jonathan Creek session
over the
years.
The fact she says, go suck a dock leaf, I think probably...
You know. I thought that was obvious. All right, so slightly, not jumping ahead, but she goes up to Lafleur and takes one bite, and of course, they have a massive, a bit of a row, don't they?
Yep.
The masseuse lady falls in the swimming pool.
Yep.
She gets pushed back in after they squabble.
Or Lucy Allen is her real name is.
All right. Yeah.
In this book, apparently.
Quite a comedy pushback into the pool, isn't it? But it's obviously a bit harsh. But yeah, a bit of comedy, a bit of slapstick comedy. We're back inside. By the way, just stop me if I'm rabbiting, because you might have something that I haven't.
No.
Martha's given some more detail about the house and its items and its artwork. And she does burn this old chap a bit with humour. Eric, who's Peter Copley, we mentioned earlier. Is he like a caretaker-y kind of old boy?
I have
boy?
No idea. He's not security, surely.
He's sort of, he's sort of semi-smartly dressed.
He might just be like the idea, I don't know.
Almost butlery.
Yeah.
Everything in this room has been in the house at least 100 years. Apart from Eric, of course, who's been here 150.
He gives that kind of, very funny look. He probably can't stand him, yeah. And then Martha goes to show the centrepiece of the house, if you like, in this specially lit, enclosed room. Very small, four-walled room with a glass ceiling.
Yeah.
Is it an El Greco's Kiss? When I wrote those notes, an El Greco's Kiss of a Judas painting.
Oh, yeah, it's actually...
Kiss of Judas. El Greco's Kiss of Judas is right.
Yeah, it's literally on this probably, book. My eyes literally just went to the actual bit.
That's probably the first time in all the years I've watched this that I've ever taken note of what it's called. I've just... being
El
zoned
Greco's
out of that.
Kiss of Judas, yeah. The pride of his collection has impossibly vanished. Right, okay, sorry.
Here's an embarrassing question. Is that a real real artist or not? El Greco.
No, I doubt it.
But is that painting, that's a real painting, but is that worth, or is that especially, okay.
I wouldn't have thought so.
We can ask Remick, can we?
Pretty sure.
It's locked away in a small room on the wall, just the right amount of light exposure, just the right temperature to keep it as pure as the day it was painted. And apparently only, eight people allowed at any one time?
Something like that, yeah.
And I don't know, I wasn't that impressed with the painting, but I haven't got an appreciation for art, personally. I remember going to Tate Modern and just being furious with the...
I think I've been to the Tate Modern.
Yeah.
Can't remember it much, though.
I've not been to many art galleries in my time, but I can't get my head around the valuation of stuff.
Yeah.
Especially by seemingly... unknown artist.
Well, not everyone's going to appreciate art or everything. Everyone, you can't, you know.
I'm sure I mentioned this before on the podcast in a different context, but I remember seeing a not very big canvas of, and it was just navy blue paint. That's it. Just, it was navy blue, and it was some...
Where was this? Wasn't that your daughter's nursery, was it?
Very good. No, it was a proper gallery, proper art gallery, but it was silly money, and it was just a tiny canvas. It was blue, and it was...
That's mental.
I think they claimed it was like an original blue, like there's no shade of blue like it. Oh, like,
that's such... Yeah, right, okay. I just find that stuff ridiculous, but yeah.
It pisses me off, but there you go. Anyway, do you know how much the insurance company...
What, is it 1.5 million?
Yes.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
What do you mean, is that right? Actually got the book open, or was that not really referencing
it? That's just me remembering
it. Yeah, well remembered, yeah.
Anything's in the book.
From afar, Eric, who we've spoken about, Peter Copley, he's inspecting his Spam sandwich, which is
Spam.
Anything up close, there's a purpose for it in there. It's not just, oh, this guy's eating a sandwich. They'll,
yeah.
Every moment matters in a Renwick episode of anything.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, you probably could say about anything, but sometimes there's irrelevant stuff shown on the screen, but this really is relevant. And the first set of girls, they've entered the room by now, haven't they?
Yep.
And they leave within seconds, really. The second lot go in. Well, at this point,
they've come out.
And
somebody's distracted. One of the girls has asked her a question.
Yes, that's right.
And then within about 30 seconds, she then gathers the next lot.
Yeah.
And they go in.
Is it even 30 seconds?
Well, at the end,
in real time, in that universe, it probably is 30 seconds. But to us, it's about eight seconds, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Because I mentioned not all of this is in sort of real time, really. Kind of obvious to say. And yeah, the mystery is revealed straight away.
Well, no, not the mystery, but the...
No, not revealed. I phrased that terribly. The mystery is on our screen. It's revealed to us that it's a mystery. There's no painting.
The mystery is revealed. The end.
Thanks for listening.
Listen, we have to be extra careful.
What?
This can't be happening. Eric! Eric!
Somehow, within seconds, this priceless painting. Obviously, the frame is still there, but the actual painting has vanished.
Cut from the frame, as she says.
From the frame. When you first watched this, did you have any idea how this was done?
No. Like I said to you before, I didn't. I always used to go into Jonathan Creek with an empty head, which is standard.
And that's what you do every day, mate.
and then just take it, just try and enjoy it and not... I mean, I'd probably try and think of ways that could have been done, but I'd never try and work it out. Not that I'd ever would have been able to, but I'd just try and enjoy it for what it was. So no, I wouldn't have a clue.
They emphasise a lot... obviously panic ensues, by the way, obviously.
Yeah.
And Martha calls out for Eric. She's panicked, didn't she? And he's comically running in his...
As he, every time. Old man style.
He's quite a gangly bloke, isn't he?
Yeah.
And he has no idea... Oh, no one knows what the hell's going on. I think it's actually... Well, it's freaked them out, isn't it? It's pretty spooky. What the hell's going on here?
Yeah.
I'd written down here that... You could correct me if I'm wrong, but I think I might have watched a slightly uncut bit. I don't remember Eric rushing around the back to inform Lefley.
Do you not? No, that's definitely. Because it looks like Bob Monkhouse and the wife is just finished having their little having a conversation, and he turns.
Okay. Well, Lefley asks Martha to phone the old Bill, and the schoolgirls are escorted out of the house. And as she's on the phone, Lefley seems to have taken a knot to the back of the head. We hear him sort of
Mr. Lefley,
and he's bleeding, and that boy, I've described him as, at this point, a bit sinister. He's just looking on a little bit like suspicious. Are we?
It's just talking about it. It's bloody clever, isn't it? How he's managed to put all this together.
He's a clever sod, isn't he? He's the same boy we saw at the beginning, peering through the window. It all seems a bit suspicious. Followed by some footprints leading to an open window, and that ends that scene.
Right.
So that's a bit of a banging opening, isn't it? It's fairly explosive.
Yeah, so by all accounts, it looks like somebody's magically taken the picture, knocked out Mr. Lefley, and ran out through a room that's Very dusty.
They focus on the ceiling window a lot because they want you, the audience, to think, well, it's obviously to do with that, but how? Because it's not broken. I reckon if I was watching that as an adult, I do watch it as an adult but for the first time, sorry, I think I might have thought there's something behind that wall, like behind the wall, and it, someone's cut it through from behind. But anyway, next scene, a rainy Hyde Park in London.
Yep.
Klaus is getting set for one of his infamous David Blaine type acts.
I literally have put on my notes, Adam Klaus, is this where he's trying to be more David Blaine?
He's trying to, because this is 98, but David Blaine, this is when Blaine was big.
It was.
The same kind of time. I remember having a video, 1989, of David Blaine's street magician stuff.
Is that the one you showed us back in the day?
Whoa.
Yeah.
I just think now it's not really that kind of magician, it's more just pushing boundaries. It's not really magic, isn't it? So, anyway, Adam Klaus is gonna do one of his tricks for publicity. Buried Alive. There's this old deer looking on. I've recognised that she's.
This feels like it's classic Renwick though, as well, right?
This is classic. She's a little old lady on a moped, looking concerned. She was in Little Britain, actually. Mentioned Little Britain was earlier. There's a sketch with David Walliams,
right?
Who's like a teenager who fancies his mate's gran. It's really wrong. And she's the gran he like ends up having sex with.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah. And she was in Bottom.
Was she?
Yeah, in the episode, I think it was where they look after the shop and watch the cricket on top of the roof.
I didn't realise that.
Yeah, she's and it's where Rick Mail goes, you're going to get it, you old git.
I don't remember that.
Dash the one. And her grandson beats him up. Anyway, she looks on and... She starts beating up all the stooges, hammering in the nails and sprays the geese on the sat in the digger. The worst acting, by the way.
Yeah.
Did you see that? Yeah. She blows a whistle to let all the members of the public.
Get away from that, you bastard!
But I love how we just cut straight into the second take of the burial. Yeah. There's no aftermath. It's like, oh, sorry, I got it wrong. With more than a sleight of hand... with witnesses overlooking the burial, Adam is actually only a few yards away in the static caravan, eye goggling the young police women.
Yeah, I'd like to know. I'd like to. I mean, this is obviously an impossible trick, but I'd like to also know, ask Remick if there was any way that could have been like done. If he's meant to be in that,
probably if a lot of what's the word used for digging? Excavating. Yeah, you have to build a tunnel underground.
Oh, you see, and you reckon you got that way.
That's a lot of work, but that's right. The way you would do it. Then he could come out the other end. There you are. See, who needs Renwick? I can write the next one. So, yes, Creek. You can tell me the episode. There's a later episode where it's when he's up there. He's doing like a crucifixion thing on a
yeah. That's series four, isn't it?
Does he actually fall out?
That's checker box.
Checker box.
Yeah, because it's all about the God theme, isn't it? I think
the ambulance take the dummy version away.
yeah. Why was there a dummy though? It was for another gag. It wasn't for another thing.
Because the hospital they takes the head off, don't they? The
no, paramedic. No, you're getting confused. No, you're getting confused. That's never seen in that episode.
I was laughing, so I just belched, but I've cut that. Okay. Anyway, so. He's in the caravan with, how many minutes in? Jonathan Creek is there. He is gleefully reading, with relish, the recent news of the missing painting of their nemesis, Sylvester Lafley. And why is he...
Oh, suck on that, you smarmy butt. It's the little lines like that just get stuck in your head.
So why is he pleased about this, Si?
Oh, because he gave them a dodgy or iffy review, didn't he, or something like that?
Yeah, basically. And it sounded like it was such a bad review that it really did damage for their ticket sales. One thing that Jonathan Creek, he's got a lot of morals, isn't he? But he'll probably do anything to get ticket sales. Or he'll make
it's his job, isn't it?
It's his job. But there's just some time he will eventually give in to making sure that their reputation isn't. That's not a bad thing as such, but that's quite a short scene, isn't it? It was quite funny. Klaus is such a. He's got such blue balls, isn't he? He sees these two young-looking police. They are police officers. They're not like community.
I don't know if they even had community support officers back then. Were they?
He's got their right. They must have been about 18 or 19. They're not very old, but he's...
Really?
I don't know, but he's eye-goggling them up. And he wants to go out. He's so turned on that he wants to go up and chat them up. It's like Jonathan Creek says, you can't go out there. Then they think you're however many feet underground.
Yeah.
Anyway, are you ready to move on to the next scene?
Yeah, I'm trying to think what the next scene was.
Well, good job I made notes, isn't it, Sam? That's good. Therapist Center. Maggie.
Oh, yeah.
I said Maggie, didn't I? Maddie. Yeah. Maddie McGowan. Caroline Quentin. The great Caroline Quentin, who's the best sidekick.
She's just great.
The others have qualities, but she is sublime. Mm. She's so good. She's being asked... Maddie's having therapy. She's having any more erotic dreams about Jonathan Creek. she recalls a fairly short dream she had of them having sex on stage at the Royal Opera House.
Last night, actually. We were making love together like, I don't know, Olympic gymnasts. I think I got down to a size 10 at one point. It's incredible. Except for some reason, we were on stage at the Royal Opera House, Covent Garden, and the audience were all booing and shouting, "Bring back the juggler."
That is a very funny... That's such... What is going through Renwick's mind to think of that? That's fantastic.
Maybe he had the dream.
Yes. We can ask him. Can we ask about your sex dreams, David? During this sort of bit of therapy, in comes an apparent Inspector Roy Gregson coming to arrest the therapist for falsely claiming...
This just feels like classic crook as well.
This is Renwick's black humour all over. Just out the blue, left field.
So good.
And he, this bloke, you think, oh God, he's this therapist is some sort of sicker who likes to. Again, I'll go back to Little Britain. Actually, Little Britain is so good. There's a therapist sketch in that. Dave Williams plays a therapist. It always starts off with him just listening to the final bit of his client's sort of tragic backstory, and then they just walk out the room, and he sort of gives them a nod of approval. And as they walk out of the room, he quickly gets on the phone and starts gossiping about him. You'll never guess what. Bloody funny. I think Little Britain's coming back, actually.
Is it?
Yeah.
I'm surprised it's allowed.
Oh, they'll probably make it less fun. But anyway, so she's having therapy. This bloke, Inspector Roy Gregson, walks in. But within seconds, another lady walks in. And I think it's his therapist explaining that... he's got a fantasy about being in this profession.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, very weird.
Did you get the name of the condition down?
No, I should have done.
No, I don't. I don't know what it
is. His therapist goes, "You work for the North Thames Gas Board." See, I can imagine David's thought process going, "What is a funny sounding job title that's so far apart from being an inspector?"
Yeah,
it's some sort of obsessive. Delusion to whatever. Anyway, it actually makes Maddie visibly uncomfortable, despite assurances, because she's thinking, "Christ,
it's unsettling when that happens, isn't it?"
Yeah,
as if it happens often.
That's what the therapist says. It's really a bit unsettling, isn't it?
All right, I think that'll do, won't it? If you'd like to come with me, please.
I beg your pardon,
Detective Inspector Roy Gregson. I'm afraid, as of now, this consultation's over.
For what reason?
For the reason, Miss Wolverton, that you're no more a psychoanalyst than I am.
What?
I'm sorry about this. It's a condition called obsessive delusion. The sufferer basically acts out a fantasy role to satisfy some unfulfilled desire in their life. In this case, listening to people's intimate sexual neuroses. But I'm afraid the party's over now, isn't it, young lady?
All right, Mr. Gregson. Leave her be, please. Mr. Gregson. I'm sorry about this. It's a psychotic condition in which he believes himself to be a police inspector. Whereas you actually work for the North Thames Gas Board, Mr. Gregson. Remember? Do forgive the intrusion. I'll try and keep my door locked in future.
It, back into the deep stuff. Actually, that's what makes it funny. Maddie going, "Oh, Christ, I could be revealing all sorts to someone, a stranger." Yeah. She goes back into the deep stuff, and she's about to reveal what else on her mind before we cut to the next scene. Anything to add?
I can't remember. What's the next scene?
Well, I've got about to say.
Yeah, I just
remember. We're at Maddie's agent's office, Barry Otter.
I was going to... I've got a little note, because I wonder why he's playing a Scottish guy. Cause
Geoffrey McGiven.
Because I don't think he is Scottish, unless he is. He's got his heritage is Scottish, but normally he's English speaking, I think.
Is he?
Like,
yeah.
He has an English accent, so unless he is like of some Scottish heritage, of like...
I don't know why.
I just wonder.
There's an actor in Fools and Horses who plays two characters. His character name's Jumbo Mills. British actor, British accent. But both characters he plays are both Australian. Both different characters.
Yeah, it's weird. I don't know what the reasoning is for
that.
I don't
know. We can ask Remick.
And I wonder why he doesn't return in... He's not in episode, series 3 at all.
Yeah, so he's in the... is he in the Solar Spigess? Can't really say it. What's the episode called?
The Reconstituted Corpse.
Yeah. Well, anyway, he's got that sort of stereotypical image. He's got the bow tie. He could be a sleaze bag, but he's not.
Quite eccentric. Yeah, he seems quite eccentric looking.
A posho, eccentric, but an agent.
Yeah.
Anyway, so Maddie.
Oh, you're looking lost, Jonathan. I can't do a Scottish accent. Sorry, that's in the wrong. That's in the wrong section of the episode. Anyway,
you confused me there because I thought Maddie is actually with him.
Yeah.
It's still a bit cryptic with regards to Maddie's endeavours or whatever it is at this point. She's going ahead with it after talking through with the therapist. So whatever it is, she's got in her mind. She has been talking it through both agent and therapist.
Yeah.
She then proceeds to suggest that. Oh, because was Jonathan there? Jonathan was actually there because I've written down that she says.
Yeah.
Oh, should we went?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Because they talk about lunch, and he goes, "I'm already late for two of them." So then that's her excuse to go to the mansion to have lunch.
Shall we went? She says, "Yes." She wants to treat Jonathan to lunch. Why does she want to treat him?
Just an excuse, I think, to get in there. I guess that she knows that he doesn't like him. I don't know.
Yeah, I know, but we know why she's doing it. But from Jonathan's point of view,
lunch,
free lunch.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, this actually takes us to the next scene. It's a build up to the journey to the stately home.
That's your burp on visual. Sorry.
Again, I burped off. That was taken out of the edit, but it's a large sound wave on the computer. It's disturbing. Sorry, I've been drinking Dr. Pepper. So in the build-up to the journey to the stately home,
yeah,
we realise Maddie is up to her old tricks. Jonathan isn't aware at this stage, is he? She's drafted him in unknowingly to help to resolve another mystery. He should know by now. I think it's referenced they've only known each other for a few months.
Yeah. That's later on again, though. That's later on. Yeah. That's just with Jonathan.
He doesn't cotton on to what they're going on, what's happening. They walk into this lovely big house, and he's quite humbled. It's like, oh, just a cheese omelette will do. As he's dragged. So, yeah, Martha greets them, doesn't she?
Yeah.
A cheese omelette will do, as he says, but before, the game's given away by Martha. As she says, oh, I'll go and get Mr. Lafley.
Yeah.
And yeah, the penny drops straight away. He's pretty peed off, isn't he?
Where's the mirror? Just want to see what a gullible prat looks like.
She's quite manipulative, isn't she? Because she...
Maddie?
Yeah, she does that sort of... she manipulates Jonathan, should I say, into staying by doing that tedious thing intelligent people likely hate. She said, it's obviously impossible. Yeah. You know, nothing cannot be explained. And that obviously... always wins him over because he just wants to prove a point, doesn't he? And by the way, he will learn how this is done in record time. I can't think of another Creek episode where he's...
No, he does do this one in like pretty much as soon as possible. But it's just that scenario, I suppose, because he doesn't like the guy. It's a good reason to kind of like do it that way. So he's not going to tell him.
Yeah, yeah. The little lad Benjamin is again looks on. Yeah. Should I say Creek starts to investigate. And as
Can I just say, he's a bit... Is it just me, or I mean, I suppose it's the way it's written, but the kid almost turns into a small version of a Creek, right? Throughout, he starts wearing Vans. Or does he wear?
Is he?
Yeah,
I suppose that's
later in the episode. He's wearing black jeans, I think, and like Vans and like a shirt, almost like Creek. Yeah.
There's actually also a link to that little boy's situation and Maddie's previous situation, which we'll speak about later.
Oh, okay.
Very subtle link. Anyway, the Creek's, he's in the room where the patent's been stolen. He and Maddie are sort of slightly quarreling, aren't they, about whatever. Mm-hmm. And then the little boy says, are you married? Because that's what my parents basically do. So we start to actually get a picture painted, no pun intended, of the boy's quite sad upbringing because he's not exactly loved, is he, despite living in this big house.
Yeah.
But apparently there's 50 grand up for grabs.
For anyone in
who can possibly
lead on where the painting is. Yeah.
Maddie knows of this award money. So he's thinking, oh, she's just here to, she needs a bit of material for a book, whatever, fine. But there's a money motive, there's a cash motive, and that cynical Jonathan learns of this and he isn't impressed. He's never impressed by the, like, because he's got these morals. He doesn't like to know about money being put on the table for solving a mystery.
I get the vibe sometimes from him, though, that he's like, he's quite well off. So he doesn't really matter to him.
Because that's what I made notes later on. It's like, it's a bit frustrating that he must know his friend. I know he's only known her a few months. She's just anyone who works independently needs every penny they can get.
Yeah.
So surely, like,
I think it's just the moral of the way she's done it, gone about doing it.
She could have
been probably a little bit more, but I guess then she would have known that he wouldn't have done it. I don't know.
I think she's thinking, I could just be honest up front with him, but I'm not going to be able to get him into that car and drive him. He just won't do it.
Yeah.
So Eric, then Peter Copley's describing the events that led up to the disappearance, which I just find naturally funny the way he did this.
Which bit?
I was sitting in that chair over there, not there, there, eating a lunchbox that comprised of a spam sandwich and a bottle of Lucozade.
I don't know why, but it just gives me... It gives me chills because at that point after he says it, the music cuts in, and you see Creep stop doing what he's doing with the kid and just like look up at him. It's almost like that's the point, I think, that he...
You should give some context to that phrase, Jonathan Creek's doing something with the kid.
Sorry.
Because they actually build a bit of a bond, don't they?
Yeah, he's showing him a trick. I think that's, yeah.
Because he's by then, he's... Well, we don't know officially, but Creek's sorted it out. He's like, oh, this poor kid. I think he's learned already through this kid that his parents argue. And he looks a little bit lost. I'll teach him a trick. So Creek is quite a humane guy, isn't he?
Yeah.
It's like an elastic band trick, isn't it? On the two fingers, and you switch them to the other two. Yeah. So whatever that trick's called. So later in the scene, Maddie's getting all the facts from the flay regarding his attack. Because, you know, if you recall, he's been hit on the head, apparently.
Yeah.
And a disinterested Creek asks him to show them...
Well, he obviously knows it's bollocks, doesn't he? Because if he's worked it out... He knows this isn't...
I just think he wants to mock him as well. Where were you when you got hit? Show us. And he makes him lie down, so lacking a bit of dignity in the moment.
Yeah.
Exactly, yeah, right. They're in some sort of library kind of study, I suppose, aren't they?
The drawing room. The sketching room.
Yeah. For the bottom fans out there. So, yeah, by now, Creek's already spotted the flaw in this mystery. And I don't know if he's conferred with the little lad. A boy of five could work out how... Why these footprints don't look so? There's some footprints on the floor.
You're in that section now. Yeah. Okay.
Why? I don't know if the lad would he looks a bit older than five. I mean, I've got Margot's. My daughter's 4.5. He looks about
8, 6 or 7.
Anyway, just splitting hairs here. A boy of five could work out why these footprints basically don't look right.
Don't look right, yeah.
Because they're going round the rug, leading to the outside window. If you're in a rush, you just wouldn't worry about that, would you?
No.
Plus the fact they don't look far apart enough that look like someone's run. So they haven't really thought that through, have they? And of course, at this point, Laflay's reminded who Creek is.
Yeah.
As Creek reels off the critical feedback he and Adam Klaus received. I loved how Maddie comically laughs this off because she's just like trying to hold it all together, yeah.
It was a ragbag of charmless chicanery ill-conceived by witless tricksters who seemed to confuse mystery with misery.
Turn of phrase he's got, hasn't he?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose this is all for the purpose of the insurance company. They need some ideas, don't they?
Yeah.
They need an explanation of why this painting's gone missing without any witnesses, so to speak.
Oh, obviously, as well, when they come into the room, you see Maddie go towards sniff a bottle of potpourri because there's quite a heavy scent in the room, hence the title of the episode.
Yeah, that'll be and a Tolkien powder.
A bit of a, would you call that foreshadowing or not? Or just a little bit of a...
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's definitely a bit of foreshadowing. But going back to that little boy who goes, I know why this doesn't look right. Why didn't they just run over the carpet?
Yeah.
I don't believe a kid would... Well, they might do because they're innocent. They just see how it is. It's like, that's weird. Why are the footprints going round the rug?
Yeah.
Because as a viewer, I certainly didn't go, well, that's obvious. They went around. I just went, boy of five could work this out. I couldn't. I was 12 at the time. Anyway, so...
Boy of 37, of six couldn't work out.
In Maddie's car, she's unsubtly... this is the great thing about Maddie. She's so unsubtle whilst trying to be subtle, trying to extract the information from Jonathan, like what's happened then? Because she knows he doesn't want to say, because he wants. Laflay is left on a what's the word? What's the phrase?
Well, he says he's worked it out.
That's
just
right.
Just before they leave, he said, "I know how your paintings disappeared. I'm just not going to tell you."
Oh, by the way, when Le Flay catches on of who Creek is, that was at the point where he goes, "Who are these people anyway? Why are you basically a know-it-all?" Mm. Not word for word, I know. That's when he quotes. That's how bitter Creek is. He can memorize the bloody quote.
Yeah.
Well, it's more than it's a quote of a whole article. But in the car, yes, she can't get out of him.
Witless trickster. It's not far off the mark for you, really, is it?
It's a very short scene as we move to Adam Klaus's house. Is this the first time we've seen his house?
No. Dance Macabre. Is
okay
when Creek's forced into the bath of that woman.
Well, he's getting ready for some award ceremony with, is it like a Royal Variety performance or something? He mentions meeting the Queen and everything. He's like doing up his tie, and you think he's saying, "Oh, he's talking to someone." We think is someone off camera, and you think, "Oh, he's got a lady friend in the bathroom or something." He's like, he's getting ready, but it's a bloody tiger. He's got a tiger in the bathroom.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Yeah. I forgot about that bit. I was getting confused with episodes then.
He's got that tiger's in...
You think he's talking to some female woman.
Yeah, but he's got a tiger in a later episode in Problem at Gallows Gate. Woman. Yeah. But, he got a bloody... And this isn't a CGI tiger. This isn't special effects. This is a tiger. He is cuddling this...
Yeah, I can remember watching a QI episode ages and ages ago, and Alan Davis talks about when they brought the tiger on the set and how it was like. Bought, I think a vague recollection of this, but I think he talks about how it was like a young adult, so it was kind of like on the border of being, you know, not being
an
able
aggressive
to use it.
Bastard. Yeah,
I think something like that. If I can remember, I can't really.
They're not bastards. They're beautiful creatures, but yeah. Also quite sad, that's clearly a tiger that's been imprisoned in a zoo all its life. So, but yeah, that's part of his ego, isn't it? Mike Tyson had a pet tiger.
Really?
Yeah. Mike still did. It's that kind of extravagant thing that rich people with an ego would probably do. Or not all rich people.
Yeah, it's extreme, isn't it? I think it's just to show what Adam Klaus is like, really.
Yeah, so Maddie's actually dropped Jonathan off, isn't she, at Adam's house, and we should say that she wanted just one clue. He did give a clue of how it is.
Well, she wanted him to tell. Wants him to tell him how it's done.
Of course, but
the reward.
That's why she said, "Well, can you just give me a clue then?"
Yeah,
and that clue is the whole thing lies to look towards Eric's spam sandwich. It contains the key
to the whole affair.
The whole affair. But it turns out Adam Klaus has managed to pull these beautiful young coppers, because they're running around in their bikinis with their police hats hanging on the edge of the banister. And he's got a indoor swimming pool with those cool
floats
a Jack and a Queen cutout. He's basically brainstorming with Jonathan about how to work, because they're going to do a Royal Variety performance, which is probably a big deal, I suppose, and trying to come up with ideas of how to play like an elaborate trick on Queen Elizabeth II. Rest in peace, Majesty. He actually comes up with, I actually thought, is a good idea on someone else, not the Queen, trying to make a first-class stamp appear on her tongue.
How could we do that?
Yeah, I mean, you'd get wrestled to the ground by all her guards, wouldn't you? But a trick on someone else, maybe, but not the Queen. We're at Maddie's house, I believe, and I don't know if I prefer her house or when she moves into a...
Yeah, series two, she's in a house.
In a flat. She moves into a flat that she's...
She's in a flat in series one, and then she's in a different flat in series three.
Right. She's got a diary in shot, and it reads, "Gordon Hill coming down!" So you're obviously thinking someone in her life has come to visit.
Boyfriend or something.
It's put on the calendar in that diary as September the 3rd, right? I thought
1997?
Well, this is aired 98, but did it say 97?
Oh, sorry, 98, did it?
No, it said, from memory, it said September the 3rd. I thought there'll be a reason.
But it said at the front, I remember it does say a 1997 diary or 1998 diary. I can't remember what it said. It might be 1987.
Well, I thought this is going to be something specific to David Renwick, because he'd have chosen that. He's very meticulous with this, isn't he? But his birthday's the 4th of September, so it's not even same. But the reason I say that, because he's used his date of birth for a couple of different events in One from the Grave universe.
Right, okay, didn't I?
The death of Stuart Meldrew, which is their son, who's died just after birth, was called Stuart, and he died on the 4th of September.
Right.
On the year of Romeo was born.
Right.
That's just in the book. But yeah, I just thought, what's the relevance of the 3rd of September? There's going to be something... Someone can ask Renwick. Creek's visiting Maddie. He's actually claiming the lunch that she promised. He's around. Yeah. He's like, yeah. And he has a peek at her diary and looks a bit concerned. You've got to remember, they've got a bit of chemistry at the moment. I don't know if they slept together or not. It's like a will they, won't they kind of thing.
They don't until series 3, do they?
Yeah, they've got such an unusual relationship because they don't obviously fancy each other, but they're just drawn to one another. But I do think it's probably more sexual, but they do enjoy each other's company to a certain extent.
Yeah.
And he looks concerned at this Gordon Hill coming down comment in her diary. Later in the day, they return back to her house. It's obviously cut away.
Arguing, aren't they? Kind of about how it was done.
She's mad at him, isn't she, for not knowing how the crime was committed. Yeah. Like I said earlier, it's a little bit tight that he's thinking, like, he knows there's 50 grand on the table. She's clearly, presumably, struggling a little bit. You know, she's not homeless, but he's got a lot of pride, hasn't he, at this point.
Yeah.
There's times throughout Creek where Maddie does something amusing, practically amusing, whilst having a whinge. It could be dipping a banana in a cup of tea, or it could be just eating, or it could be something. In this case, she's topping up a bottle of wine into a huge ass with a funnel. She's got a funnel into a large, like a 2-litre bottle of wine.
Yeah.
But that's the funny side. I don't know, there's a word for that, but it's like an off thing, off-piece thing.
In fact, the way this trip was worked is so sublimely simple. When I tell you, you'll wonder why you didn't get it in 5 seconds flat.
Well, for goodness sake, put me out of my misery. What was the significance of the sodding spam sandwich?
But as Maddie seems to give up hope, Creek starts to break down the events, and he takes the piss, doesn't he, by suggesting it could have been some high-powered laser used through the glass. Have you ever considered it could be? Which is what probably
you
was going through a lot of our minds.
Me. Yeah. The idea's ridiculous. Yeah, what's the point in that?
Well, he draws... It's just humour. He's just winding her up, and he... You ever thought it could be some high-powered force? But, yeah.
I suppose it's to highlight the fact that it's actually... Because he even says, doesn't he, like... of course it isn't. That the idea's ridiculous. If in mind, it's actually simpler than you think it is.
Yeah. Kind of. And what's the significance of the sodding spam sandwich? That's a line that delivered by Caroline Quentin that only Caroline can make funny.
Any
actress could have said that in the same tone and manner, but for some reason it's funny because she's so frustrated. She's not getting anywhere with it. She's an investigative journalist, and she's probably supposed to have a better brain for this sort of thing than she does, but she at times she does fall short. Anyway, there's obviously when Jonathan's, he's sort of beating around the bush, isn't he? He's sort of saying, he's having a dig at the potpourri thing. He was saying what the significance was of the scented room.
Yeah.
Because that's when he first sort of started to think, what's... And she thinks,
and
yes.
The potpourri on the table. hence the cut from, yes, like, of her sniffing it earlier on.
Yeah. But it's only affected when it's inserted up nostril.
Yeah.
As he says.
Bowl of potpourri. Yeah. The biggest con of the 20th century. Yeah,
isn't
so
it?
Basically.
That was a thing in the 90s, though.
It
a bowl
never
of potpourri.
Stank. It never, unless you literally did put your nose in it.
Yeah, I used to, but we all did it. We used to go, oh, that smells quite strong, but you wouldn't smell it from far. No way. No. Whoever
potpourri.
Invented
that's
that.
That's not
as
a thing anymore, is it?
Oh, of course it's not. You have, like, not quite incense sticks, but they're like little glass bottles with a stick, scented stick. That does stink in a good way. So as he's about to reveal the significance to this, the scented room, shall we say, in comes the patient from earlier who thinks he's a copper.
Yeah.
Why has your ID got North Thames Gas Board on it?
Now, don't get clever with me, laddie, or you'll regret it. Failure to disclose evidence is a serious matter.
So is impersonating a police officer.
And was that missed time? Because Maddie, obviously, she's put him up to this, isn't she? Very cunning, isn't it?
Mm.
She's setting right because Creek's walked out.
I mean, what I always think whenever this is just, obviously it's the gag, but like, she could have got anyone to do that. Why did it have to be that guy? Just because he's got like a personality disorder or something? Like, she could have got anyone.
Well, yes and no, but he kind of quite convincing with it. He's in a suit. Like, he's got his heart and soul into it.
This poor chap that's got some weird.
It's quite it's quite exploitative of his of his his mental health at the time.
Yeah,
but yeah, he.
Just because he's got a suit and has his hair slicked back and some handcuffs or something like that.
I know, yeah.
Yeah, it's,
how did that end, though? Did Maddie sort of...
He just leaves. He just leaves. And says, I'll see you in court.
Yes, that's right, yeah, yeah. But how... Does Jonathan know she's put him up to that?
Yeah.
Yeah, because she says, oh, I had to try something, but how does he know?
I forgot. He's just a clever bastard, isn't he? That's what...
But he wouldn't have known about this incident in a previous scene.
No, he wouldn't have done, but he's obviously...
I had to try something, Jonathan. Anyway, we're on to the next scene. Back at the stately home. And
the
treehouse.
Treehouse, yeah.
So, I don't know if the young lad, Benjamin, has actually spoken up and said, you don't actually treat me nicely. Well, you treat me nicely, but you don't show me any love, but...
I think they just buy him whatever they want.
It's a bit short-sighted at the minute because he's obviously wanted a treehouse and it's the most soulless looking treehouse.
Yeah, it looks horrible.
Made of anything but wood, isn't it? It's got a little lift as well. I think the lift bit's cool, but you're not climbing the bloody tree.
There's a slight continuity error in this bit.
Go then, nerd.
I can't remember where I originally found this from, but like he. Bob Monkhouse does the lift, doesn't he? You got a lift so you don't skag your clothes, and he does the lift and it goes up.
Right.
And then the next scene is him on the phone and then lifts down on the floor.
Oh, yeah, I didn't notice that.
Just little things like that. Just mention it.
But some people like that. There's two very disinterested parents. Whilst Lafley receives a call, and it's the insurance company saying they're not going to pay up, not enough evidence. And he's demanding, like, Creek's bloody well going to tell me. This is where they start to hatch a plan to ruin it for them, retaliate, if you like. A very quick scene. Back at the windmill for the first time in this episode, he's doing a bit of housework as he receives a call from a very infuriated Adam, who's at some restaurant, I think.
Yeah.
I
thought last night when I was watching this, you were asking me what your favorite... I asked you what your favorite Creek was, and you were saying...
Don't
know. Quote. As long as it's got a windmill, a pub. I can't remember what she said now.
Windmill, a pub. Obviously, Maddie McKellen.
Adam Klaus.
This is the episode, yeah.
I mean, it's got a restaurant. It's not quite a pub, but...
I think, yeah, Problem at Gallows Gate is probably my favourite, though. Definitely.
Yeah, yeah, I do love that. It's got an eeriness to it, isn't it? Sorry.
Yeah, this episode isn't really eerie. It's like, how the hell did that painting get taken? But it's
very
nothing...
cleverly done and cleverly written, I think.
But Adam Klaus lays on the line, but this Lady Trees has got a bit of power in the she's within the parish, she's got influence, and they'll prevent them from doing their show, and obviously Lafley is going to write more damning reviews. You bloody well, if you want a job, you need to go over there and tell them how it's done. Basically, you do the big reveal, do your duty, and obviously Creek succumbed to that. I've got to play ball now. Where we're taken to Barry Opper's office.
I never knew that was his surname.
No, I didn't. This is part of the prep, Sam. It's without this, I would go, it's the agent guy.
Yeah. Well, Barry. That's what I know him as.
Bazza. He's on the phone claiming he can't even... This is what it's semi-interesting. The sign of the times. Barry's on the phone to... I don't know who. Was it Maddie or Crit or someone?
No, just some other random...
And he goes... Oh, I can't even remember my postcode, let alone my email address.
Yeah, email. What's that? I can't remember.
Email would have been obviously very new at the time.
Mm.
So, most of us can reveal our email address. We have been able to for many years now. But back then it's such a new thing. So Creek arrives and he's querying, basically, amongst other things, querying who this Gordon Hill is, the name written in Maddie's diary. He's seemingly a bit insecure about it. And this is where we learn they've only known each other for a few months,
which is mad. That means they've had at least six or seven mystery.
Yeah, one a month almost.
Yeah,
because the reason why we know they've only known each other for a few months is because Creek's trying to delve into her psyche, if you like, and Barry's like, no, you don't really know what she's like. She's got quite a dark background.
Yeah.
I don't know why Jonathan's gone there. Why has he gone there? Sorry, just to find her.
To find her.
He says, your Maddie's basically absconded from the area.
He needs to get on and tell.
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
Well, tell them how it was done, where and that's where it is.
No, I thought I did my own work on this. So actually, quite a dark. Again, this is one of these moments that I've never really paid attention to before. But Maddie's mother basically killed herself when Maddie was 17 over some stealing some bacon. Her mother was shopping.
Mm. No, she was accused of stealing bacon.
Accused of stealing bacon. She killed herself over it.
Yeah.
Yeah. When he goes, well, who's this person that's visiting her? This Gordon Hill. That scene ends. We just still don't know. Yeah. And we are taken to a weeping Maddie looking on as her old house is demolished. Well, it's a house that's been demolished. There's obviously some link to Maddie, hence the tears.
And I read on, I glanced at this book earlier on and
I know what you're going to say. This,
what?
Touch of Frost.
Oh, yeah. It says on there, in fact, the footage, this footage of the demolition was actually borrowed from an old episode of Touch of Frost.
Yeah, there was just no suitable demolition at the time.
The location department couldn't find any terraced houses that were being knocked down in London. But by coincidence, and our director of photography, Peter Jackson. Is that the same Peter Jackson he did?
It won't be the same Peter Jackson.
You wouldn't have thought so, but you... No, because you... I don't know when... I mean, I'm not a fan of Lord of the Rings.
He was probably writing Lord of the Rings at that time.
Well, that's what I was going to say, yeah. You kind of thought that he'd be doing that.
Let's look that up. Hang on.
We're sorry. All of our representatives are still assisting other customers. Please remain on the line, as we value your call.
No, it's not that Peter Jackson.
No, it's gonna...
Yes, this is where we see as Jonathan and Maddie walk off from the demolition. He's this is the caring side of... I say the caring side of Jonathan. He's always pretty caring anyway, but this is where they have a rare moment where they're not at each other's throats or being sarcastic or having banter. This is just pure care. But the place was Gordon Hill on a sign in the rubble. Gordon Hill SE6. So that's, I think, Maddie saying kissing goodbye to not kissing goodbye, but she's basically put into bed her crappy past. Yeah, anyway, we're now at the school of these children, these girls we saw in the first scene. And obviously it's insane how I don't even know in 98 an adult could just go into a school
into
playground
school and start talking to the pupils. Yeah,
they start... They're there to basically... They've got some... Creek knows how this is done, but he still needs... There's still...
He needs to find out why. Why? Yeah. I think, why was it done?
Yes. They're full on in the playground talking to three or four girls about... obviously, we don't hear how it's done until much later. And we're then back at the Stately home. We're there to hear the big conclusion, the big reveal, the mop-up, whatever you want to call it. Whilst Creek initially spots Ben and he says, do you want to learn a new trick?
Looking and dressed like Jonathan Creek.
Yeah, he's obviously... Yeah, but I suppose...
Hands on.
It adds up because they've probably been back and forward to the state home for a number of weeks. So he hasn't really got a mother or father figure. So
yeah, that's true.
Creek's the only person that's shown any interest in him as a person. So that's actually quite sweet. But he teaches him a new trick, whatever that may be. We don't see
it. Well, you know what it's going to be.
I know, but in
it's
the moment,
be it's gonna, yeah, yeah,
yeah, in the
yeah,
moment, yeah, we sorry, don't know, yeah, do we? I'm yeah. We're reviewing this as like it's right, yeah, for the first time. Keep up.
Sorry,
about
I
that.
Haven't done this before.
This is podcasting, San. They're in the room. Everyone's in that room, in that particular little painting
gallery.
Gallery.
Oh, yeah, the room. Yeah.
And Jonathan asks everyone to leave except for Ben, the little boy. And they all leave. They're obviously a little bit... The players are looking a little bit bemused at that, and it feels there's a little bit of music played in there, like passing music, just
over 30 seconds to pass, yeah,
just to
pass the time,
almost incidental music, but yeah, just to pass the time.
Oh, no,
he can't be.
How in the devil did
you... Now remember, Benj, first law of magic, never tell them how it was done.
And they open the door, and we see Ben sat on the floor, cross-legged with the painting, with gasps from everyone. And I could always hear Eric going, oh, how did you?
Yeah.
Why is that funny? I don't know. But yeah, well, I mean, it's the painting has materialized again. Yeah, they don't want to tell the beauty of this. I'm sure this has happened in another episode, you can tell me. Jonathan says, you know, to sort of direct to Ben, you know, the art of a good trick is never tell him how it's done or words to that effect. I'm sure they'll coax out of him, but Jonathan just doesn't want to. He's holding on to that bit of pride. I don't want to tell you how that's done. I want you to be forever left amazed at how that was done. And apparently, this is incredible as well. Maddie turns down the reward money in favour of them giving their child some actual love.
Yeah.
That's very deep, isn't it? Not realistic at all, though.
I was going to say, not realistic at all.
50 grand.
If it's your...
Give the advice and take the money.
And take the money, yeah.
But it's obviously to make a strong point, because they'll be going, they turned down this money with the message of us actually showing an interest in our kid. Mm. So maybe that would have got through to them, maybe, but 50 grand.
Yeah, that's mental.
In today's money, it's double that, isn't it, with inflation?
Yeah.
Crazy. And then there's sort of... We're nearly at the end now. It's a bit of back at the therapist, if you like.
Well, no, they go. Doesn't it go back to them talking to the schoolgirl and her sister?
Well, yes, this happens at the therapy because it's flashbacks. So, I actually thought this was a different therapist, but it's the same one in the room with Maddie.
Mm.
And we got a flashback of the demolition. So she's talking about recent events, the demolition of her old house.
The only way I could ever get through all the horror in life is to try and forget about it.
I think I might just have stepped in front of that digger.
If he hadn't showed up at that point. To put the seal on that business of the stolen picture. Do you remember me telling you about? Talk about the last person I'd have ever suspected.
And I actually put a note here. It's kind of mirroring the burial trick and the digger from the trick, because we see that happening, and we see the trick with the digger and the, not linked at all, but they're both two different, do you know what I mean?
What do you mean,
you got a digger for Klaus's trick, you got a digger and rubble,
right,
and you've got this totally different thing. It's just coincidental, I'm sure. Anyway, then she goes on to talk about the person behind the theft of this artwork, and it's one of the school. She goes, talk about being the last person I ever thought. And this is when we cut back to the their visit to the school, and you get the girl who's a bit perplexed. How did you know? It's quite a sad backstory, actually. So we then cut back to the therapist, and she starts to talk it through, and she says they recall right in the first place when they went to identify what's going on with this missing painting, that there was a lady called Melissa mentioned, who's a childminder, a nanny, being a bad influence on the boy, because parents can be like this with if their kid's a bit nosy. So you shouldn't be like that, you know. Don't be actually similar. I put similar to the Matilda storyline, actually, because there's basically this. So the motivation behind this theft was a bit of payback, because they fired this little boy's nanny who he got on really well with. Because she was a bit what they saw as a reckless nanny. Because she actually had
indulged him and all this.
Yeah. They thought, oh, he's making him be a bit common here. They fired him. And then, of course, she wanted Melissa wanted to seek revenge. It sounds like the mother is the worst of the two, though. She does actually get violent and jealous. Yeah, sacked for being too fun, this nanny. It's actually quite a sad scene. Actually, that is sad. I think that the boy crying, like he's not going to see his nanny again.
Yeah,
I mean, it's really messed up, actually. Like, there's no harm done there. She's doing the job she's paid to do.
Yeah,
surely don't want some boring Victorian type nanny looking after him. But anyway, Creek said, like, he could work out basically as ever. You just got to eliminate every possible explanation, and he could work out by the wooden door and the markings. And her, this Melissa's fella's a joiner or something, and I don't know if a joiner would necessarily come up with this idea within a few seconds or not. Maybe because he was doing some work there one day, wasn't he, or something? at the house.
They were clearing her stuff away.
And then that's where the spam analogy was mentioned earlier. Looked at Eric's spam sandwich because the painting was placed
between the doors. Yeah.
Between the doors.
Sorry, between the door, isn't it?
Like, between the actual door panels, yeah. And of course, had the flashback to Lefley being hit on the head, whereas actually that was by his wife, and that's why he needed an alibi to use an excuse. Or
maybe we should have said there's spoilers in this. It's about a 20-year-old episode.
And also, that painting is kind of almost, it's not exactly paper, is it? It's a type
of... It would be a fabric, wouldn't it?
Fabric. And how did that... How you slide
a Stanley knife.
If you slide that up, it's going to just ripple. It's not going to go
up. Oh, I see, yeah, yeah. It'll just fold on itself. But maybe it's quite rigid because of the paint. I don't know.
Back to the therapist. So that was a bit of a flashback from Maddie's point of view, talking to the therapist.
Yeah.
And what I put here, actually... She finishes off the story and reveals they actually kept the secret to protect the nanny. Otherwise, the nanny would, that would be, I don't know, was that illegal what she's done?
What? Not?
The engineering of that trick, is that illegal? It's damage to property, I suppose.
Well, yeah, but she would have probably been charged with something. Or
the door and the cutting out that paint. That's going to devalue it a little bit,
yeah,
I think.
Well, yeah, cutting it would be.
I should also mention the, not just the potpourri, but the talcum powder thing was the scent. Where they couldn't get out of their heads. What was that smell like?
It was to create fake dust.
Yeah,
yeah. To make it look like somebody had ran out the house.
Yeah. But I actually said what I would have done if I was Maddie and Jonathan. I would have said, like, we'll tell you how this is done, but you need to basically negotiate the nanny getting a job back.
Yeah.
Well, that would have been pretty bloody special. Like, you need to swallow your pride.
Yeah, come on, David. What are you thinking,
David? But yeah, like, don't worry about the money, give her a job back and we'll get your painting. Basically, they would have said yes to that.
Yeah.
But then they could have sacked her again another time. So yeah. Maybe not.
Yeah, maybe.
Creek and Mandy needed to have something on them that they like. Because in time, they wouldn't care how it's done. They got the painting back, so I don't know. Maybe David thought of that. Sorry, David. Should never doubt you. So, yeah, are they at Maddie's house or Creek's house at the end here, where they're just mindlessly talking about their two different topics that, like, husband and wife, stereotypically, not listening to one another, going over recent events?
Oh, is this where they're going, is that Tugger's part or Tugger's part? Then it gets...
Yeah. Well, that's the end.
No, I think it's probably Maddie's place, isn't it?
Yeah,
I would assume.
They're talking about just the recent royal performance. And
when they're not. The one's talking about one thing, and the other one's talking about the other. Yeah. Neither of them are listening to each other.
That's part of the joke, but he's talking about the royal performance in part. Yeah. She's talking about, well, you know, whatever.
She's talking about having a family and...
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, yeah.
And stuff.
And then that end gag is Jonathan saying, I don't know about you, I can smell the scent of talcum powder. And he gets a load blown in his face. But did she do that as a joke or because she was annoyed at him for not listening?
I don't know.
That ends the episode. And usually it ends like on a little punchline like that, doesn't it?
It always just ends really quickly.
Just abruptly.
Abruptly.
So I take it you rate that a 10 out of 10.
What, in terms of Creek?
No, in terms of EastEnders. Of course I mean Creek.
Oh, I guess, I don't know. It's hard to rate stuff. I don't really... Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say it was my favourite episode, but yeah, it's probably one of the best, I think.
Yeah, it's right up there, but that's the one you show people in it.
Yeah, because it's just an easy, it shows, it's got a bit of everything, basically.
Yeah.
And well, it's quite a quick to the point episode.
It's quite well structured. It's plenty of humour, but it's clever. dark, macabre type moments. Maddie's past and the little boy not having a loving relationship with his parents, that's quite sad.
Yeah.
So yeah, great episode, and I can't say any more. We've pretty much decimated that episode, haven't we? Pretty well, we've decapitated
rinsed it.
We've dissected that to buggery, haven't we? So
yeah.
Well, if you've got any thoughts on this particular episode,
me?
I'll talk to the listeners here, mate. There's more than just us in this room, metaphorically. Please contact... You're learning how podcasts work, aren't you? Who are you talking to? Talking to my audience. I'm talking to both. I talk to both of my audience here. Both of you listening at home. Or one of you. get in touch if you feel obliged. If you've never watched that episode before and you've listened to all of this, then I applaud you, because
yeah,
that and might I'm have hoping been a bit squiffy.
When I was last on it, we were trying to make it sound good, and it sounded, Tom was very loud. Oh,
that's an
distorted.
Ongoing matter with.
But hopefully this one will sound better now.
So. Yeah. I've not used my mic, so that might be key. I've got a good mic, it's just I didn't know how to work it effectively. A Blue Yeti's a great make. It's certainly better than what I used to have, but I can't really operate these things as well as they're intended for. So but anyway, we've got a barbecue to make, well, disposable barbecue, but you know, but bloody angry. It's a Saturday as we record this. It's beautiful nice out there. We're in your studio, but we'll soon walk. I bet we'll
It'd be pissing with rain when we get out there.
No, but if it's sunny, it's just because we're in this room. It's a well lit room, but it's the natural light is going to blind us. Right?
Be fine.
The shades on.
Be fine.
Thanks everyone for listening. Yeah, and thank you. We will be. David has. How many times have I said? Oh, we'll ask David, but he's agreed to come on the pod. The time of recording, haven't agreed a date, but
I'd like to be a little bit more just somewhat prepared in some ways. So. To do that.
If you've got any questions or observations for us to raise with David, then just send us a message and we'll
keep
them
to yourself. No,
yeah. Take all right, take care, everyone.
Thank you.